2, and this is the beginning of a mini-series on Emacs. And before you press fast-forward, don't worry, this is not a religious war. I'm actually kind of both an Emacs and Vim user. I use Emacs for my creative and technical writing, and I use, like, documentation kinds of things. And then I use Vim really for conf files or quick edits when I'm updating my index page on my other podcast's website. I use both. I can't get into the whole Emacs versus Vim, one's better than the other. I'm just not there. Maybe at some point in the future someone will make me a really good offer, you know, the Emacs Liberation Front or the Vim People's Army will make some kind of offer to me and sway me over to their side, and I'll use one or the other exclusively. But for now, I'm pretty good with both of them. I'm happy with both of them. I think they both do different. They both fill different needs quite well, and I'm well aware that both of them are powerful enough really to be expanded upon and really become really the only editor one may ever need. But right now I'm fine with using both. And besides that, I think that we all know that the real enemy here are those littler text editors like Nano or Pico or gedit, which claim to be, you know, real text editors when really they're just trying to detract from the power and market share of Emacs and Vim. So watch out for those. Anyway, my point is that I'm not selling you Emacs here. This is not a show about why you must use Emacs, why it's so great, why it has a bad rap, but really it's such a great application. I don't care about any of that stuff. I just am finding that, like any really good application, the further you, the more you use it, and the further you kind of like start to explore all of the different options, the more you find out that, wow, it really lives up to its reputation as a robust platform. So here's what Emacs does for me. It's got plugins galore. If you want, I don't know that they're called plugins. Like I say, I haven't really been indoctrinated into the whole Emacs fold, and I don't know the terminology. I call them plugins. They could be called modules, whatever. It's got a lot of them. I don't know if you've heard, but yes, it's got a lot of stuff that you can load into Emacs, and they become little applications in and as of themselves. And it's very powerful. So no matter what kind of text editing you are doing, you could probably imagine, you can probably count on there being a module to help you do that thing. So whether you're programming in Ruby or Python or C code, I imagine, or you're editing conf files, XML work like DocBook, whatever, or even HTML, I use the XML mode for HTML, or like I've mentioned on my show quite a bit, even screenwriting. There's just all kinds of modules that you can load up, and of course it's customizable enough that you can just assign them to a certain key binding, and it can be like F1 or F4 or whatever you want. So they're very, very easy to get to. Emacs has accessible programming language that it uses called Lisp, and I believe that the variant that Emacs specifically uses is called eLisp. And I don't know anything about Lisp or eLisp. I don't know why it exists or who came up with it. I know it's pretty old. It's actually pretty easy. Well, I shouldn't say easy. It's accessible, meaning that even if you're just a noob like me, non-programmer, don't know what you're doing, if you open up a couple of eLisp plugins that you use, or you open up even a very complex .emacs file, which is a config file for Emacs, you look at it and you honestly, you start to get a feel for what they're doing. You start catching on to little conventions that, you know, if you hang around enough, you start to really kind of get into it, and you start to make up some of your own. You save it, you try it out, it doesn't work, you go back, you do it again, and it kind of works. You finesse it, and finally, you've got little stanzas of eLisp that you've written, And it's working, you know. So I don't know if that's really programming. I don't know what that would be called, but it is very, I guess, hackable. And I'm telling you, it's very hackable from. This is coming from me, Klaatu, not a programmer. And even I, little old me, was able to take the screenwriting plugin that changed my life, and let me write screenplays in Emacs. On any platform that Emacs would run on, which is basically everything, any processor, you know, any OS, whatever, I was able to take that plugin and actually patch it and add functionality to it, and that's not normal. So there's obviously something going on with this little Lisp or ELISP thing that someone who doesn't know anything about programming can actually figure out. So that's exciting. It's also accessible to blind people, and I've done I think a whole episode on this, and I've written an article on it. I think it was about to be published and then it wasn't published, but you know, it's out there anyway. So and it's there's this whole interface called Emacs Speak, which is an eSpeak based interface that will read lines on it within Emacs, and since Emacs has so many plugins, in theory, you could really, if you're blind, you could launch Emacs. You could even launch it upon login, and you'd have a fully spoken, a text-based spoken interface that you can use at any time. And especially since, I mean, like I say, if you have any kind of propensity toward coding, you might even be able to really kind of tweak your environment to exactly how you want it, simply because it is so accessible for everyone. There's endless customization. Like I say, it's a very accessible programming environment, but it's also just it's there's so much you can do with it. Everything is customizable. It's really it strikes me as something a lot like KDE, for instance, where if I want to put Mac keyboard bindings on KDE, it takes me one moment to load my little config file, and bang, I've got that. If I want to make it look completely different, I can take away menu bars, I can move panels, I can do whatever I want to so easily on, for instance, KDE, so that it works exactly how I want it. Same deal with Emacs. You can just go into the .emacs file, your main configuration, and totally change everything around. Change the keyboard bindings. If you don't like the whole Control X, Control Y, Control X, Control S, you know, all Control X, Control U, you can change it. You can actually just tell Emacs to do a global set key and change the bindings. So you don't have to settle for whatever people are handing you, which is one of those oft-cited reasons for using Linux in the first place, right? People say, well, I really like Linux because I can customize it exactly for me. And the same truly applies to Emacs. It does teach you bash tricks. Ever since I started using Emacs on a fairly regular basis, my bash navigation has become a lot more efficient. I've gotten around in bash so much smoother just from knowing all the Emacs key bindings. Now, again, I'm not trying to sell you on Emacs or anything. I'm simply telling you this. You're free to use, for instance, the Z shell and put in your Vim key bindings, and you too will be more efficient on in your shell, in your terminal emulator. So it's the end result is the same, and that equals you getting better at what you do all day anyway. But I'm just saying, if you prefer, if you're using Bash, if you know Bash, you're comfortable in Bash, and you are curious about Emacs, then learning the two in tandem actually really work well. Did I mention that there were plugins available? I think I did, but I should probably just mention that again. There are a lot of plugins for Emacs. And, of course, last but not least, there's even a text editor. Yes, I threw in that old joke. Okay, so some words of warnings, because, you know, Emacs is a very famous entity, and so there are some things that we should talk about, kind of clear the air, get a common understanding here. So first of all, yes, run Emacs in a GUI. Believe me, I used to think, because, see, my introduction to Emacs was on Mac OS X. And Mac OS X ships with a slightly older version of Emacs, and you access it through the terminal. And you'll see on all these Mac rumor sites and Mac forums that there are these cool little hacks in the terminal, and what you do is you go in and you type in the word Emacs, and then once that launches, then you type in, I forget how they get you there, but it would be something like Meta X, the word Tetris, you know, and then you can play Tetris in the terminal, and it's so cool, and people are like, oh, this is great, I don't know what this Emacs thing is, but there's Tetris, and it's in the terminal, so I must be really a power user now. When I found out about Emacs, which of course was actually because of Tetris, I realized that this must be a really cool application, and I started reading up on it, and I kind of found the GPL through that. Basically, it all went downhill from there, no more Mac. But yes, in my mind, Emacs was like this cool terminal thing, and when I heard that there was a GUI out for it, I just thought, well, that's just crazy. That's ridiculous. No one wants a GUI. And so I tried to teach myself Emacs in the terminal. And let me tell you, it was just with the tutorial, no less, the Emacs tutorial. And it was the most miserable experience of my life, I think. It was hard. They kept telling me not to use arrow keys. And I felt bad because I wanted to use the arrow keys. So I was using Control F and B and N and P. And they were all over the keyboard. It was horrible. It felt terrible. Do not do that. Don't do that to yourself. The non-X version of Emacs is so much easier to run after you've run the X version of the Zorg version of Emacs. I'm not saying X Emacs. X Emacs is a different project, but there is X, and you should run X, and you should run Emacs in X. Do yourself that favor. You get the mouse, you get a friendly little menu, you get a scroll bar on the side. It will make you happy. You will like it. So that's probably how it's already installed on your distro. Like if you get Emacs from your repository, it's going to come down with X, but don't be like me and always launch it with the no X flag or whatever it was. It's just not worth it, trust me. You can learn it in Zorg and then you in the X graphic environment, and then you can SSH into a box somewhere and start using it without X, and it'll be great because you won't need the menus by then. But at first, just don't do it to yourself. And for the record, one of the smartest Unix guys that I know swears by Emacs, and yes, he runs it in X, so don't fear the GUI in this case. Don't be a key binding snob. Again, I was trying to do the Emacs tutorial. They kept telling me don't use the arrow keys. I was learning Control F and B and P and N and all these other commands, and it was just terrible. It was a horrible way to navigate on a daily basis. The arrow keys are a wonderful invention. No one should ever have a keyboard without arrow keys, and I was trying to avoid them for a long while, and it just ended up with me not using Emacs at all. That was the end result. You know, rather than going into Emacs and using it, I would avoid it because I knew that I couldn't use the arrow keys or something stupid like that. So I finally realized that I have not been at a keyboard without arrows in a very, very long time, at least not regularly. Admittedly, there have been those times, but And they're not computer keyboards, you know, they'll be like cell phone or Nokia handset kinds of things where you're in this hacked together terminal on a rooted device and they don't have arrow keys. They didn't allow for that. So that's when you just kind of pull back from the old memory banks the fact that Control F is forward, Control B is back, Control P is previous line, Control N is next line, and that's all you have to do, you know, that's enough. You've heard it from me once, you will probably remember it the next time you happen to find yourself in front of a keyboard without arrow keys using Emacs. Or Bash, like I say, you can actually benefit a lot from these Emacs tips in Bash. But my point is, don't worry about having to play by rules and having this fear that, oh, well, what if I'm in front of someone else's computer and they've got a standard install of Emacs, then what will I do? Because I won't know the key bindings. Yes, you will. Don't worry about it. It's not that complex. Customize. That's why we use this OS, and you'll be using this text editor for the same reason. So, yeah, feel free. Customize it. Make it exactly how you want it. You will enjoy it a lot more. And finally, don't be exclusive. Like I've said, I use both Emacs and Vim, and sometimes Kate. You know, I mean, it's just whatever you want to use. Don't don't think that you have to get into the whole cliche of I'm a Vim user, or I'm an Emacs user only, or whatever. It doesn't matter. Emacs is a program. Vim is a program. They don't actually care what you use. They're not aware of your feelings. Use whatever you want to in that moment. If you're doing a quick edit to something and you want to use Vim, go for it. If you want to do something a little bit more complex, or something with a plugin that you know you love, and you want to use Emacs, do that too. As funny as the little cliche is, the little in-joke about Vim versus Emacs, I think in real life people don't actually care. So you shouldn't either, really. So we should get started then. So if you haven't installed Emacs yet, or if it doesn't come pre-installed, and a lot of times it doesn't come pre-installed because it is a big program. It's a very, very large program. So, and with just cause, I mean, if it was just a text editor at 75 megabytes, admittedly, I would look at it maybe with a little bit of trepidation or suspicion, but it's so much more. So, install Emacs from your distribution, or if you are not on Linux at the moment, you can, of course, get it for OS X from emacsforosx.com, I think it is. It's a nice little Cocoa GUI that you can use, and it'll still work exactly like normal Emacs. It's really, really great. And on Windows, they have a Windows binary on the Emacs site. You can download it. I don't really know how to install it or how to even run it, but it's a binary, so you can launch it however you launch it on Windows, and it will open in some fashion. And again, it'll be exactly like Emacs that I'm talking about on Linux, with the couple of exceptions, like I don't know where you would put the .emacs file on Windows, for instance, but on OS X it'll be exactly the same. All the paths and everything will be basically the same. So, yeah, it will run on anything. Believe me, it's fantastic. I've got PowerPC boxes all over the place, and happily, all of them run Emacs, and I can write a screenplay at a moment's notice on any computer, so it's really nice, which is actually more than you can say for any other screenplay writing solution out there. But I digress, so let's get started. So launch Emacs, and the first thing you should see is a splash screen, and somewhere on that splash screen there will be a little checkbox that says don't show this next time. If I were you personally, I would check that box, because the splash screen starts to get annoying after a while. But whatever you want, but I would, if you check that, then next time you launch it, it won't give you the splash screen. Here are the must-know key bindings. Control X, hit Control X, and then Control F. That finds a file. What is finding a file? Well, it means it's going to open a file that already exists, or it will establish a new file that does not yet exist. Now, if you hit Control X and then Control F, you'll notice that, well, in the GUI version, no, it's actually the same in both. You'll notice that your cursor kind of disappears, sort of, and if you look down at the bottom of your Emacs window, there's this little strip down at the bottom, and it's asking you to find a file. So that's just where you can text enter what file you want to open. This little strip at the bottom is called the mini buffer, and that's a term that you're going to want to remember. I'm going to try to use it fairly frequently, and I'll also call it the little strip at the bottom so that we keep remembering that we're talking about the little strip at the bottom. But that's the mini buffer, and that's kind of the interactive mode of the functions of Emacs. So anytime you're in Emacs and you're doing something, you're executing like some kind of command that's then going to need another argument from you, it drops you down into the mini buffer. The great thing about Emacs is, one of the many great things is, that there are no pop-up windows. I mean, obviously this is fairly common for textual terminal kind of based editors. There really can't be pop-up windows exactly. I mean, there can be. Lynx uses it, or Elynx, one of those two, but it's not really the same paradigm anyway. But Emacs doesn't do that. They give you little what are called buffers, little frames within your window to respond within. on the other hand, if you want the GUI, you want the pop-up boxes and the dialog boxes, which is fine. Like I say, you don't have to be exclusive here and say that, well, I'm going to use Emacs and I'm not going to use any pop-up windows. Dialog boxes are for noobs. It's not necessarily true, or you might be setting this up for a noob. Either way, if you feel like that right now, then go to the File menu, and you can choose either Visit a New File, which will, if you select it, it will bring up a dialog box, just like a normal GNOME, probably XFCE, that kind of GTK dialog file dialog box, and you can create a new file. You can name the file whatever you want to. Or you can visit, or rather open file, and that will let you grab a file that already exists, and it will open it up in your main screen, in your main buffer. Not the mini buffer, in the big buffer. And so that's opening a new file, or establishing a new file, either way. So if you do that, and you just type some random stuff into it, doesn't really matter what you write, but just, you know, give yourself some text to play around with. There you go. Now, the next thing you would probably want to do is save it, and that's Control-X, Control-S for save. So already you're probably getting the idea, okay, so these commands are largely based around Control-X. You would be right. A lot of the commands in Emacs, the preset commands that Emacs pushes over onto us, are Control-X. Or they're Control-X and then some other thing. So it's a little bit like Vim, where you hit the escape key and then something. This is kind of like, okay, we're going to hit Control-X to get into a mode, or into an executing something mode, and then we hit another keyboard shortcut or another key, and it does something. So kind of good to remember that. And like I say, everything's customizable, as you'll see, but we'll stick with this for now. Control-X, Control-C will close Emacs. Now, if you haven't saved your document yet, it will ask you, are you sure you want to save? Now, like I said, normally in Emacs, it won't ask you in a pop-up window. I've seen the pop-up window come up, and that is if you go to the menu and select Quit, for instance. Then, yes, a graphical pop-up window will pop up, and you can choose whether you want to save it or save all the buffers or whatever. And we'll talk more about buffers. Don't panic. But in if you're just doing it with the Control-X, Control-C, then down in the mini buffer, that little strip down at the bottom, it asks you, hey, or it tells you, hey, this buffer that you've got here isn't saved yet. You've made some changes. Are you sure you want to quit? So you can say yes, and you want to save that, yes, or no, I don't want to save it, continue. So just read it, respond. It will do what you ask it to. It's very nice like that. Okay, what if you accidentally hit a key? Like, accidentally Control X, and actually you didn't want to do anything. You don't have anything to do. You don't want to save it. You don't want to open a new file. You don't want to close. What do? Well, you hit Control-G. Control-G is the panic button. I don't know why it's Control-G. I always think of it as GNU. Like, you have to call on GNU to help you or something. I don't really know. But Control-G, that's like the panic button. If you ever do anything and it's trying to get you into some other mode or force you to give it a command, just hit Control-G a bunch of times. And it'll get out of that mode, and you'll just be in normal sort of text editing mode again. Okay, so those are the must-know key bindings, the ones that you've just absolutely, you've got to know about them. It is very powerful, Emacs, because it has a built-in GNU screen. I don't know if you know of GNU screen. If you're a frequent terminal user, I'll bet you do know about GNU screen. GNU screen is this thing in the terminal that will launch invisible terminals on top of each other, and you can switch back and forth. So you have one terminal window open, and you might do a top on one, and then you can launch a new screen, and it just kind of overlays a new terminal over top, and you could do, I don't know, tail or dmessage pipe tail-f. Now you're looking at your little kernel message log interactively or continuously, and then you could do a new screen, and you'd have that open, and then you could go into a conf file and edit some stuff. you're using screen. Well, in Emacs, it's very, very similar to that concept. So you've got one window, right? You've got a Emacs window, and it's open. Well, right now we're sitting in this this file, this foo.txt file that we started. But you could open a new file and call it bar.txt, and then you'd be in that file. Where did foo.txt go? Don't worry, it's still open. It's just in this little invisible stack of windows that you've got inside of your Emacs window. So let's play around with that a little bit, and then we'll call it a day for this episode. But this is a cool feature, and I wanted to kind of get you familiar with this concept before we call it done. So buffers. Like I said, Control X, Control F will open a file, right? So if you are without a file, do a Control X, Control F to find a file, and you can create a new file. For instance, foo.txt. So this creates a new buffer, and the buffer is by default named whatever the file that it contains is named. So right now, if you've just typed in Control X, Control F, and then gave it the name of /foo.txt or /documents/foo.txt, whatever you're naming the thing, then your buffer is called foo.txt. And inside of that buffer is an unsaved document without anything in it yet called foo.txt. So type some stuff into it. Just, again, just kind of give yourself something to play around with. Some text. Okay. And then Control X, Control F. Now we're going to open a new file. So find a new file, maybe /bar.txt. And now we've got another buffer called bar.txt. How do I know this? Well, because I'm staring at a blank screen again. So we'll type in some more stuff. Now we'll identify this for ourselves. I'm just going to type bar, 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 bar. So now I know this is bar.txt. It's very readily apparent. Okay, so now we know, because we did it, that we have two buffers open. The question is how to get between them. It's actually really easy. Control X and then the letter B, as in buffer. So when you do that, look down at your mini buffer, that little strip down at the bottom. It says switch to buffer. And mine says default messages. That's because I'm not really doing everything that I'm saying I'm doing. But yours should, I think, say default foo.txt. So you can hit return to switch over to foo.txt, or you can hit the up arrow. And you'll scroll through all of the different buffers that are actually open. You probably didn't even realize they're open. There's a scratch. There's a messages, and in mine, of course, there's a foo.txt, and then hpr underscore emacs, which is the notes that I'm doing to keep me on track for this. And then there's a blank one, and there's a .emacs. So there's all kinds of things open right now. And if I just scroll up or down with my arrows, then they scroll through those buffers and get me into one or the other. So I can switch back and forth. Essentially, I mean, if you think of it, it's kind of like two windows on a desktop. You know, if you do an Alt-Tab, then you're switching back and forth between those two windows. That's what you're doing here. Control-X and then B, and you're switching back and forth between your open documents. You can also, if you are a little bit overwhelmed by so much scrolling, is just, instead of hitting up or down or enter in your little buffer dialog box, just hit the question mark. And you'll see a new frame slide in from the side, and it has a list of each different buffer that is available to you. And you can, with your mouse, yes, I know, using a mouse in Emacs, it's phenomenal. Now, there are other ways to do this, but we're going to use the mouse right now, because I'm sure you're probably starting to get pretty nervous with all this stuff going on. So we'll just click on the buffer that we want to go into, and sure enough, it opens that buffer for us. Pretty impressive. So yes, there is a mouse, and you can use it to some degree. That's buffers. That's the general idea of buffers. You should try to play around with those buffers, that concept, over the next week or so or whatever. Play around with the keyboard shortcuts. Control X, Control F for file. Control X, Control S for save. Control X, Control C to close. And then Control X, B to switch to a buffer. And you can always kill a buffer, too. If you get tired of looking at the same buffer all the time and you're annoyed with it, you can Control-XB to the one that you want to get rid of. Let's say the scratch. and then Control X K to kill it. And it says kill buffer, default scratch. That's the one I'm in right now. I'll hit return, and now it's gone. It's no longer in my list of buffers. So that's kind of nice. And remember, Control G is the old, good old panic button. It's really important to remember, because you'll be using it a lot, trust me. So that's it. I mean, that's the beginning of Emacs, and already we've seen some pretty cool features, like these buffers that keep getting automatically created when you open a new document. We've seen a new frame slide in from the side. Okay, it didn't slide, it popped in, but, you know, the new frame with this list that we could even click on with our mouse. Modern technology at its finest. So yeah, this is very exciting. I can tell you're excited for more, but I'm gonna cut you off. I'm gonna call it quits. It's for your own good. We will resume our Emacs lessons in another episode. For now, just practice the commands and the keyboard shortcuts that I've given you, and then we'll do more in part 2 of Emacs from Noob to Pro.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.